I'm VOA's Jeff Custer with this worldwide news update. Lebanese authorities say Israeli forces killed nearly two dozen people and wounded dozens more in South Lebanon as a deadline for Israel's withdrawal from the area has passed. Reuters correspondent Arthi Therapian reports.
Lebanon's health ministry said 22 were killed and 124 wounded throughout the south because of what it described as Israeli attacks on citizens while they were trying to enter their still occupied towns. Lebanon's U.S.-backed military, which reported one of its soldiers among those killed, has accused Israel of procrastinating in its withdrawal. The Israeli military said that it, quote, fired warning shots to remove threats in a number of areas where suspects were identified approaching the troops. This Lebanese man says that it's unfair to say they're forbidden from their homes after they've waited more than a year and 4 months to return.
That was Reuters correspondent Arthi Therapian reporting. Israel has begun allowing Palestinians to return to the heavily destroyed north of the Gaza Strip for the first time since the early weeks of the 15-month war with Hamas, in accordance with a fragile ceasefire. VOA's Tommy McNeil reports.
Thousands of Palestinians headed north on Monday after waiting days to cross. Associated Press reporters saw people crossing the so-called Netzarim corridor shortly after 7 in the morning. The opening was delayed after a dispute between Hamas and Israel, which said the militant group had changed the order of the hostages and released in exchange for scores of Palestinian prisoners. Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
The ceasefire brokered by the U.S., Qatar, and Egypt is aimed at winding down the deadliest and most destructive war ever fought between Israel and Hamas and securing the release of dozens of hostages captured in the militants' October 7th, 2023 attack on Israel, which triggered the fighting. This is VOA News. International Holocaust Remembrance Day is Monday, and it falls on the 80th anniversary of the liberation of Poland's Auschwitz death camp by Soviet troops. The day is being observed with a memorial at the site with world leaders in attendance, including French President Emmanuel Macron, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, and Britain's King Charles III, among many others. Associated Press correspondent Donna Warder reports on how one of the last of the aging survivors is remembering the Holocaust.
In London, 94-year-old Manfred Goldberg said he survived the Holocaust because he was seen as slave labor. But his 9-year-old brother did not and was murdered.
The mourning took place internally, but if he had refused to go to work, we would have lost our lives because that was the purpose of keeping us alive, even if on a starvation diet.
Goldberg survived the Polish concentration camp Stutthof near Gdansk, where more than 60,000 people died from typhus, lethal injections, or the gas chambers. I'm Donna Warder.
The U.S. and Colombia pulled back from the brink of a trade war Sunday after the White House said the South American nation has agreed to accept military aircraft carrying deported migrants. Reuters correspondent Gabe Singer reports.
U.S. President Donald Trump had threatened tariffs and sanctions on Colombia for refusing to accept military flights carrying deportees as part of his sweeping immigration crackdown. But late on Sunday, the White House said Colombia had agreed to accept the migrants after all, and Washington would not impose those penalties. Colombian Foreign Minister Luis Gilberto Murillo on Sunday said his country's government had, quote, gotten over its impasse with Washington. The Colombian statement did not specify whether the agreement it had struck with the U.S. included military flights, but it did not contradict the White House announcement. It added that Murillo and Colombia's ambassador to the United States will travel to Washington in coming days for follow-up meetings.
That was Reuters correspondent Gabe Singer reporting. Preliminary results from Sunday's election in Belarus indicate leader Alexander Lukashenko extended his 31-year rule with a massive win that Western governments have rejected as a sham. Reuters correspondent Naima Pratton reports.
According to results published on the Central Election Commission's Telegram account, Lukashenko took 86.8% of the vote. European politicians said the vote was neither free nor fair because independent media are banned in the former Soviet state and all leading opposition figures have been sent to penal colonies or forced to flee abroad. Lukashenko, a close ally of Russian President Vladimir Putin, has said that he doesn't care whether the West recognized the election. The EU and the US have said they do not acknowledge Lukashenko as the legitimate leader of Belarus after he used security forces to crush mass protests following the last election in 2020.
That was Reuters correspondent Naima Pratton reporting. That wraps up this news update, but the world and the news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Jeff Custer, VOA News.
Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on African News Tonight.
But that number will increase. The mere fact that this is a protracted situation that has been going on for some time. Now it's almost decades in the making.
That was Abdullahi Halaki, senior advocate at Refugees International, who says nearly 500,000 people have fled the DRC city of Goma as M23 rebels advanced on the city in recent days. Details coming up. Also, the withdrawal of Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso from the Economic Community of West African States takes effect today. And South Africa's president says he is confident in his country's relationship with the U.S. under the new Trump administration. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Amid fighting between M23 rebels and government forces in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC, some organizations are relocating staff because they no longer feel safe. This comes after the rebels said over the weekend they had taken control of Goma, the biggest city in the region. VOA Nairobi Bureau Chief Maria Madiallo has the details.
Rose Chuenko is DRC's country director for Mercy Corps. She tells VOA that since last week, the humanitarian group has closely monitored the situation as government forces and M23 clashed in and around Goma, a city of around 2 million people.
From Wednesday last week, with the fall of Minova, followed by the fall of Sake, which are key supply routes into Goma, the situation looked a little bit more dire, and with the imminent takeover or incursion into Goma itself by the rebel forces. So we made some decisions first to move out non-essential staff, pull back our teams from the ground where it was no longer safe to continue to provide humanitarian services.
But that changed quickly as the situation grew more unstable in Goma, the capital of North Kivu province, which is on the border with Rwanda.
On Sunday, with the escalation of the conflict around Goma, we had to pull out even the senior team into Gisenyi so that we can continue to operate and provide the necessary support to our teams across the country.
She tells VOA the situation is dire.
As of yesterday, we know that the airport at Goma is closed and under M23 control. We have heard reports of sporadic fighting throughout the center of Goma City. Some of us on this side of the border could actually hear gunshots at some point during the night. We are aware of M23 presence in Goma, but still uncertain of what the actual situation is.
As M23 rebels last week made advances into Goma, 3 UN peacekeepers died and 7 South African soldiers and 3 from Malawi serving in a separate Southern African mission, SADC, also were killed, according to the UN and South African officials. At an emergency meeting on Sunday, the United Nations Security Council called for an end to the hostilities. Bintou Keita, the head of the UN mission in Congo, addressed the council via video link and painted a bleak picture.
Roads are blocked and the airport can no longer be used for evacuation or humanitarian efforts. M23 has declared the airspace over Goma closed. In other words, we are trapped.
Jack Mongi, a Goma resident who sent VOA an audio message in French via WhatsApp, says that fighting was still going on around the airport. He says, as I speak, you can hear gunshots. We are under our mattresses, under our beds. And if you listen, you can hear the gunshots. The Congolese Minister of Foreign Affairs told the Security Council that this is a frontal assault, a declaration of war. VOA reached out to the Rwandan government for comment, but has not heard back yet. Many countries present at the special meeting condemned the attacks, including the acting U.S. ambassador to the UN, Dorothy Shea, who called for a ceasefire.
The United States will consider all the tools at its disposal in order to hold accountable those responsible for sustaining armed conflict, instability, and insecurity.
In Nairobi, Kenya's President William Ruto said he spoke to both Congolese and Rwandan presidents and called for an immediate and unconditional cessation of hostilities. Ruto, who's also the chair of the East African Community, says he'll be convening an extraordinary EAC summit in the coming days to try to chart a way forward in this crisis. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
Just a short time ago, Kenyan President William Ruto said the leaders of Rwanda and the Democratic Republic of Congo will attend a crisis summit on Wednesday. Kenya currently heads the 8-member East African Community, EAC, of which both the DRC and Rwanda are members. At a news conference, Ruto said he's spoken with Rwanda's President Paul Kagame and DRC's President Felix Tshisekedi, and both confirmed they would attend the meeting. As we just reported, M23 rebels say they have captured the eastern DRC's largest city, Goma, as the United Nations described mass panic among its 2 million people. A short while ago, I spoke with reporter Sabiti Jafar Al-Katanti, who told me DRC government forces did not fight to protect the city for fear of collateral damage to civilians.
The situation is confused because M23 took the control of the city this morning. In many neighborhoods of Goma and many places, there are still fightings and the use of even heavy ammunition, heavy caliber.
What do people expect now?
For now, the people left their house early morning when soldiers were surrendering. But when fighting started, all activities stopped. Everybody returned back to his home.
How are you and your family doing?
Myself and my family, we are good, as we can say, even if kids are afraid because of this gunshot and detonation. But we are in a safe place. We decided for our security to leave from our neighborhood.
A week ago, Goma was under government control. Now it's under M23. The rapid transformation of the city from one group to another.
This impacts a lot because, you know, for now 1 week, Goma is without any energy, no water, no electricity, and not good internet signal, no food, because all roads are blocked, and many families are suffering. That's one thing. And another thing is also the change what you mentioned. People were had confidence with the National Army, but now they will be under control of new people, new persons which were just 1 day before were rebels, and just 1 day after, all of that will change, and they will now have new authority. For some people, there will be the first time to meet them, to see them. This will affect a lot. And also one more thing, the life, the normal life of Goma will is also affected. Like, for example, banks won't work anymore because banks still pending by Kinshasa, and families or people who have money in their bank, how will they live?
And not only the banks, but the radio stations, the media, who's controlling it right now?
Local media, all local media switched off their transmitter. But we know that when they will take the entire control, the total control of the city, they will have to talk to people, because we are not talking only about Goma. Goma is the capital city of an entire province, which is so bigger than the country of Uganda. So many cities were depending by Goma. When Goma fell under a rebellion like this, this affects also those other cities. Goma has an international airport. Goma is the hub of the humanitarian team, which the UN agencies, UN mission, NGOs all of them depend by the road of Goma, by the airport of Goma. So for now, all of these will be affected by this change in the leadership of Goma.
The transformation is very shocking for, you said, for the people who live there in Goma and the surrounding areas.
Some areas outside Goma, which are still under the government control, will depend by who, when the governor of Goma has left the city, when now the city is under rebellion control. That is one thing I'm asking myself. A city like Butembo, which is big trading center and depends by Goma. The city of Beni also depends by Goma. So the mayor, for now, the mayor of Butembo doesn't have his chief. Goma doesn't have a governor. Goma doesn't have a mayor. So to who the mayor of Beni will report everything of Beni? To who the mayor of Butembo start reporting? All of these questions are the one which show that this transform of the leadership in Goma here will affect not only the city of Goma, but will affect all the entire province of North Kivu.
Any word from Kinshasa?
The spokesperson of the DRC, the minister Patrick Muyaya, said on a statement they decided to leave the country, the official to leave the country in order to protect civilian life, because as government they could not prefer to fight in this. That could make many collateral damage. That's how, as the government responsible, they decided to leave and let the M23 get inside Goma without killing lots of people.
So they actually gave up because they were concerned of collateral damage.
Exactly.
That was reporter Sabiti Jafar Al-Ketanti. He spoke to me from Goma. The rebel group M23 continues to engage in heavy clashes with government forces today and claims it has taken control of Goma, the largest city in the Democratic Republic of Congo's east. Refugee International senior advocate Abdullahi Halaki tells VOA's Carol Van Dam that hundreds of thousands of Congolese fled the city over the weekend.
The numbers that we have as of yesterday were something slightly under a half a million, but that number will increase. The mere fact that this is a protracted situation that has been going on for some time now, it's almost decades in the making, and people that we spoke to when we were there a year ago, some of them are people who have been displaced multiple times. So my estimation is that on the lower side, we might see something close to a million people being displaced. Never mind, already we have got almost 7 million people internally displaced in the Democratic Republic of Congo. We have almost a quarter of the population, that is slightly under 25 million people, who are already in need of humanitarian aid. This will make the situation that is already perilous incredibly, incredibly difficult.
So you're saying about a million people just in the Goma area have
yes.
already fled?
Yes.
And right now we're hearing that it's gotten so bad, the fighting, the bullets are flying everywhere in the city, that the people can't even get out. They're trapped. Is that true? The roads are blocked?
The roads are blocked not for the reasons of preventing people to move. What M23 is trying to do is to take over block by block, road by road. As a result, what they are doing is they are setting up roadblocks. From a purely military point of view, that makes sense. But when you consider, A, people are trying to leave a place that they are insecure and they've been barely secure before this, when you consider that humanitarian groups need to move in unimpeded, this then will trigger a chain reaction that will affect everybody in that pipeline. But more importantly, the people who are in desperate need from the humanitarian groups that now are being cut off from the humanitarian groups, that will compound the situation. In a peaceful situation, these things are just chugging along in the background. The system is working. In humanitarian setting, they are held together, if you will, by our chewing gum, which now is getting frayed as we go along.
These people that you're talking about and the challenges they're facing, what are they doing? And how is Refugees International, you know, trying to help with what's going on?
The best we can do is to advocate for them. One is the African Union, East African Community, and SADC that are leading two parallel but related peace processes should lean on the parties to the conflict, especially the Rwandese government that the UN and the US government have provided credible evidence that is supporting M23 to immediately cease their attempt to take over of Goma. Second, and more importantly, they need to allow for unimpeded humanitarian aid and restricted movement of refugees who are running away from this particularly painful situation.
That's Abdullahi Halaki, senior advocate at Refugee International. He was speaking to VOA's Carol Van Dam here in Washington, D.C. On Sunday, the United Nations Security Council held an emergency session in the Eastern DRC fighting. During the meeting, Therese Kayikwamba Wagner, the foreign minister of the DRC, blamed Rwanda for the fighting.
Les signes ne trompent pas, le Rwanda se prépare à orchestrer un carnage.
Wagner says the signs are unmistakable that Rwanda is preparing to orchestrate carnage in broad daylight. And she says it is imperative that the combat cease immediately. She says each hour that passes brings our region closer to a tragedy of an unimaginable scale. And she says the fighting affects all of Africa. The DRC has long accused Rwanda of backing the M23 rebels, which Kigali denies. However, Kigali has said it has troops in North Kivu province to protect Rwanda from the DRC forces near the two countries' border. Rwanda also accuses the DRC of fighting alongside the Democratic Forces for the Liberation of Rwanda, the FDLR, a Hutu ethnic force that is accused of attacking ethnic Tutsis in both countries. Rwanda's ambassador to the UN, Ernest Rwamasoye, told the council members that the DRC has allowed the FDLR to operate in the eastern provinces and to threaten Rwanda's territory. He says the international community has failed to act for more than a decade to resolve the conflict in the region.
The situation we are facing today is no surprise to anyone. It mirrors the same situation 12 years ago. It is the result of the complete mismanagement by the DRC of a complex problem. The international community also has its fair share of the blame for being completely insensitive to the root causes of the problem and allow legitimate actors to operate completely out of their mandate. The situation we are in today prevailed exactly in 2012 and 2013. At that time, no political solution was undertaken to ensure that the issue is resolved to its root. Council members, we now stand at a critical juncture where we need to find ways to return to the diplomatic and political processes that focus on practical solutions.
The Deputy U.S. Representative to the UN, Dorothy Shea, says the United States condemns the hostilities in Goma, including reports that Rwanda's troops had fired into the DRC.
The United States will consider all the tools at its disposal in order to hold accountable those responsible for sustaining armed conflict, instability, and insecurity in the DRC.
She also said the U.S. is urgently calling for a ceasefire. The Eastern DRC, which is rich in mineral resources, has experienced more than two decades of conflict. The M23 is the most powerful of the more than 100 different rebel groups operating in the region. You'll find more coverage on the situation in the DRC on voaafrica.com, as well as all our social media platforms. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. The withdrawal of Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso from the Economic Community of West African States takes effect today after a year of political tensions that fractured the region and left the bloc with an uncertain future. The French news agency AFP says the three countries have ignored ECOWAS's call to extend the period by 6 months to try to find a solution. Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger are now united in a confederation called the Alliance of Sahel States, AES. They will put a common passport into the circulation today and have announced a unified army of 5,000 men to fight jihadists soon. Togo's foreign minister recently declared his country did not rule out joining the AES. Ghana, under newly elected president John Dramani Mahama, is also reaching out to the AES. He has met its leaders and announced that he will name an envoy to the new bloc. The United States has a new chief diplomat after Marco Rubio was sworn in as Secretary of State. Rubio has taken a tough stance on China and pledged to advance America's interests abroad, but has not been specific when it comes to his Africa policy. South Africa's president says he is confident, though, in his country's relationship with the U.S. under the new Trump administration, as Kate Bartlett reports from Johannesburg.
It might have been chilly in Davos, Switzerland, at the recent World Economic Forum, but South African President Cyril Ramaphosa said he expected warm relations with the United States under President Donald Trump.
President Trump is a great deal maker, and so am I. So we will be able to work together.
Mr. President. But not everyone shares his optimism. Analysts predict that Pretoria's cozy relations with Russia, neutral stance on the Ukraine war, and International Court of Justice case against Israel over Gaza won't sit well with the new U.S. administration.
Now, for the past administration, the consequences of South Africa's relationship with Russia, with China, with Iran, and, you know, parenthetically, with the International Court of Justice were seen as irritants. And they were seen as things that make the climb up the hill harder, but they weren't seen as breaking point questions. Under the Trump administration, they certainly will, as the State Department, be watching that very carefully.
South Africa is also a staunch member of BRICS, the group of emerging nations that includes Russia and China. Secretary of State Rubio has called out South Africa in the past for its warm relations with Beijing.
Now we get the Trump-Vance administration, which is starting very clearly on the foreign policy of America first. So it will mean that if South Africa is pursuing quote-unquote BRICS first policy, it will run counter to this foreign policy and it will be in trouble.
Some Republicans have already called for a full review into relations with South Africa. Some analysts say the U.S. could take punitive action against South Africa for not being aligned with Washington on foreign policy, such as ending trade benefits.
Yeah, I think that this sort of the length of the tether that the U.S. will have is shorter. It's going to be less tolerant of countries that, for example, are major recipients of U.S. aid, but vote against the U.S. at the United Nations.
Hartley says this could either increase U.S. influence in Africa,
or alternatively, it could push these countries out of the U.S. sphere and into embracing alternatives.
Analysts say the U.S. will likely continue with the Lobito Corridor, a railway project to transport critical minerals from Zambia and the Democratic Republic of Congo to Africa's West Atlantic coast. Another big move could be if the U.S. recognizes Somaliland, a self-governing region within Somalia. But all in all, says retired diplomat Spector, Africa is not that high on the agenda.
As far as Africa is concerned, let's be honest and let's be fair about it. Africa is very far down the totem pole of the places and issues that the Trump administration is going to pay attention to.
For his first international trip, Rubio is heading to Panama. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg, South Africa.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheye Suhib in Washington. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Kayla Williams, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.